Welcome to the Partial Historians.
We explore all the details of ancient Rome.
Everything from the political scandals, the love affairs, the battles waged, and when citizens turn against each other. I'm Dr. Rad.
And I'm Dr. G. We consider Rome as the Romans saw it, by reading different authors from the ancient past and comparing their stories.
Join us as we trace the journey of Rome from the founding of the city. Welcome to a brand new episode of The Partial Historians, an ancient Roman history podcast. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Rad.
And I am Dr. G.
So Dr. G, let's quickly recap where we have been in our narrative of Roman history so far.
Ah, yes. Well, we most recently looked at the years of 448 and 447.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like one of the things that's happening in Rome in this period is that they're dealing with the sort of the power vacuum that has come about through getting rid of the decemvirs and exiling them. And how do the patricians and the plebeians relate to each other now?
Yes.
And you know, there's been a little bit of tension, I think it's fair to say.
There certainly has. Apparently, there were like secret cabals of elite patricians that were conspiring.
What are they doing? Growing potatoes all by themselves?
I have no idea what's going on, but certainly the plebeians are feeling very attacked.
The plebeians are feeling attacked,
yes.
And that is where we sort of come into this new year of 446.
Absolutely. So without further ado, let's get to it. Dr. G, so it's a new year, 446 BC, must have some new consuls.
We do have some new consuls. I'm very excited. We have Titus, Quinticius, Capitolinus, Barbatus.
Now that is a name I have definitely heard a number of times before.
Has quite a legacy.
Yes.
Was consul in 471,
if
you're interested. That's episode 86 from
Thank
our
you.
Podcast. He was consul in 468.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty big year for him. He was in some conflict with the Volscians and the Aquians, wasn't he?
Not only in conflict with the Volscii, but also conquered Antium.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That was a big win.
It was a big win.
Yeah.
Episode 88.
Yeah.
Was consul in 465.
Yep.
A massive victory over the Aquii near Mons Algidus.
Mm.
So to the sort of southeast of Rome. Episode 91.
Yeah.
And consul, now,
yes.
For the fourth time.
And hint, hint, will be again, I think. One to watch.
So, has a reputation as being reasonably sympathetic to the plight of the plebeians.
Yeah, I believe that when he was consul once before, one of his colleagues was, well, not one of his colleagues, his colleague was Appius Claudius.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Famously disagreeable towards the plebeians.
Yes, absolutely. And his colleague, in my account, is Agrippa Furious.
Finally, we get a Furii back into the mix. Agrippa Furious, yes. I mean, this is a guy that I don't think we've come across before. Very new, very fresh. And I do have some things to say about Agrippa Furious, but I'm not going to say them until I think we're a little bit further into this episode. Because literally, so I'm reading Dionysius of Halicarnassus.
Yeah.
You're reading Livy.
I am.
And Dionysius of Halicarnassus has cut off as a source for me. And he does cut in later into 446. He does cut back in at some point. Now, whether he cuts back in for me today in what we talk about is anybody's guess.
Okay. Well, okay. I think then I can leap in because, unsurprisingly, Livy starts by telling me that the new consuls have quite a handful to deal with. And that is because they are dealing with domestic tensions.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tribunes.
The tribunes,
yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. The tribunes of the plebs and the plebeians are not feeling happy with the patricians. I am now melding them together.
Yeah, I feel like that's fine. Yeah. It's a whole new species of Roman now. Ah, the Trebians.
The Trebians.
They're the ones that we should have been on the lookout for all along.
Exactly. Forget about trying to figure out who the plebeians and the patricians are. It's just the Trebians, yes. So tensions inside Rome are high because the young patricians have been hooning around in their cars and causing mayhem for the poor plebeians and their tribunes.
They just seem to be going around and beating people up for no good reason, including tribunes. It's really quite disgusting and deplorable.
They are being complete douchebags.
Yes.
Overprivileged, oversexed, douchebags, driving around.
And nobody's telling them to stop.
No, exactly, yeah. The elder patricians are like, well, it's not great, but I'm also not going to punish you. Great. Good
Fantastic.
One. Good one. Yeah, excellent. That's how they'll learn.
Rome's future is really bright now.
Yeah. Not commenting on our society at all, but anyway. So tensions inside Rome are high. And that threat of a foreign war is also there. So in my account, it wasn't as apparent as in the inscription that you found, but I did mention that there was something on the horizon with the Volscians and the Aquians, very traditional enemies of Rome, and that is bubbling right back up at the moment. But of course, it's not the ideal for them to having to be dealing with that because there are various patricians that are finally being put on trial.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, who's been put on trial?
Unfortunately, I don't...
Juicy details.
I don't have juicy details, you
no.
know.
No!
Yeah, so there seem to be various patricians who are on trial. There are fights breaking out in the assemblies.
I wonder if it's the ones that ended up in the tribunate and shouldn't have been there.
Ooh, maybe.
I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. But, of course, the Aquians and the Volscians are like, excellent.
Now is our time. Domestic tensions on the rise.
Exactly.
Time to move forward into Roman territory.
Once again, they haven't been able to hold it together for 5 goddamn minutes.
These guys are so unstable. We'll definitely take them this time.
Yes. So the leaders of the Aquians and the Volscians, they're keen to get a little bouteille. Oh, hey. And so they encourage their people to believe that, look at what's happening in Rome. The plebeians aren't at all obedient to the wishes of the patricians anymore. And they're not going to go along with the levy.
Ooh.
You saw what happened in 447, maybe, apparently, according to Livy.
yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So now is the time to strike. Civil war is tearing them apart. There's no unity there anymore. So their armies combine, the Aquians and the Volscians get together. We've seen this happen.
They're traditional allies of each other.
Absolutely.
They are living to the south of Rome, essentially, and sort of covering that whole southern region.
Yes.
With the territories that encompass both of their tribes.
Yeah.
So for them to get together, not unexpected at all. They've done it before.
Yep.
They'll probably do it again.
Yep. And they resort to, again, classic strategy of ravaging the territory of the Latins. And then sitting there going... And nothing happens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rome doesn't respond?
No.
This is a
problem.
They're
distracted. They're distracted.
This is a problem, though, for the Latins, because the Latins have entered into a treaty with Rome. And so they're now formal allies.
Yes.
And Rome tends to have a duty to look after the Latins now.
You would think. One would think. And so they decide, well, I guess if they're not coming after us, we just keep going.
Nice.
Yeah. So they keep going.
I can't see them.
Yeah, they keep going until they reach the very walls of Rome.
Oh,
the Esquiline Gate. Yes.
Wow. Somebody would have seen them coming at that point, surely.
Well, they do. And even if they didn't, they draw attention to themselves by going, hey, Romans, look at all the stuff we've captured.
Oh, dear.
Yes. So... it becomes quite clear that lands have been well and truly devastated, and they were allowed to just leave with no consequences, and they go off and march on Corbio.
What?
Yeah. This is not good. So, this is the moment, Dr. G, for someone, to bring the Romans together again.
Is it going to be Agrippa Furious? I hope so.
It's not. It's the other guy. You had a 50-50 chance and you blew it. So it is, of course, Titus Quintius, who, as you foreshadowed, has been known to be a little bit more moderate as far as patricians go. Mm. So, of course, he's the one to bring it all together. So he summons an assembly of the people, and it's time for a big speech.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
What, Livy actually has a big speech?
Well, more or less. I have given this speech the subtitle of "Oh, woe is me." And the "me" is referring to the patricians.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's get on board. Let's get on board.
All right. I'm nestling in for a good old patrician speech.
Okay. So, Quinctius says, look, I know that technically nobody's really done anything wrong. Technically. Nonetheless, I can't help but notice that the Aquians and Volscians have come to the walls of our city.
They're right there.
Yeah. And they're obviously feeling pretty darn good about themselves. This seems a pretty shameful thing for Rome.
That one's wearing my pajamas.
Yeah. And he says, I really wouldn't have got on board for being consul if I'd known that this is where the year was going to turn. I'm really not happy about this situation at all. I would rather be exiled, or indeed dead, than watch Rome sink to such depths as apparently being practically captured on my watch.
Dude, you're the consul. Get the army together.
Well, I think that's what he's trying to do.
Buddy.
I think that's what he's trying to do.
Well, maybe have, like, some intelligence gathering so you knew they were coming before you saw them over the last ridge.
Well, I think he's trying to point out that this is not his fault, because he says, if this was something that had happened because of the actions of the consuls, then of course you should kick them out of office and punish them. But I think the subtext of that is it's not the fault of the consuls. Yeah. If it was due to the faults of the citizens, then only they can repent and do something about it.
Oh, no.
Now, look.
Daddy Consul is laying on the familial guilt.
I'm all for citizens, you know, taking responsibility. I think far too much these days we do rely on businesses and government to do the right thing without ourselves being impacted whatsoever. However, that is today. In this day and age, I am not convinced just yet. He actually points out that it's not really because the enemies are so courageous or so amazing in battle either that this has happened, nor is it because the Roman people are cowards or lacking in courage either. Really, it's because of a lack of unity.
Ah, well, he'd be right about that. There has been a lack of unity. The last 2 years of Roman history has definitely proven that.
Oh, yeah. And this is all about getting the band back together, for sure. So neither the plebeians or the patricians are respecting the magistrates of each other. Now, I do have a slight problem with the consuls being seen as exclusively for the patricians.
But it doesn't surprise me that the patricians see them that way.
Exactly. And we know that the tribunes of the plebs are, in fact, tribunes. And so, of course...
the tribunes.
Yes, exactly, yes. Now, this is where it starts to get really problematic. Okay. The patricians... Oh, Dr. G. They have just given and given and given.
What have they given?
Oh, everything. I mean, I can't name anything specific. But that's because I'm not Quintius.
Oh.
So... Okay, this he does actually give me a list, I'm just kidding. He gives me a list. So, the plebeians wanted tribunes.
We gave them tribunes.
They got them. Not because they were serving any purpose.
It was a gift.
It was a gift for the sake of harmony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. Not only that, plebeians wanted decemvirs. They allowed that to happen. They were elected. It happened, okay? That was apparently something that only the plebeians wanted. I mean, I guess I get where he's coming from in that they wanted a law code.
They did want a law code. Did they get one? Kind of.
Yeah. They got sick of the decemvirs. The patricians got rid of the decemvirs.
I mean, with good reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I feel like this is a bit of a retelling, a reframing of the old history.
Hang on a second. I'm not done yet. You have to appreciate just how deep the sacrifice of the patricians has been.
Okay.
Because this is what he goes through. Mm-hmm. The plebeians were angry at the decemvirs after they had served their term. And so they allowed these elite men to be persecuted into either exile or death. I mean, how much more can you give?
We didn't just sit around and allow them to keep living their lives in Rome like good patricians.
No.
We forced them out because of you, plebeians.
Exactly. And then on top of that, they wanted the tribunes back. They wanted the tribunes back.
No, the plebeians wanted the tribunes back, yeah. And so the patricians let that happen.
They did.
So gracious, so kind.
They wanted consuls of their own faction.
Mm.
And so they gave them Valerius and Horatius.
Ah.
Even though that was blatantly unfair to the patricians. They also wanted the right of appeal.
Mm-hmm.
The protection of the body of the tribunes. Plus, they wanted their decisions, the plebeian decisions,
to be count, binding, to actually count.
Yeah, to be binding on everyone. All of that was permitted in the name of equality when really it was trampling on patrician rights. God damn it. The patricians have put up with all of this. And yet, there is still no unity in Rome, Dr. G. I mean, my God, what will it take?
I don't know, but I'm really quite concerned. I mean, Titus Quintius, up until this point, has a reputation of being reasonably sympathetic.
Well, moderate, I think, is the word I want to use.
Reasonably sympathetic with the plight of plebeians.
Yeah.
But, oh boy, is he showing a different stripe now?
You just wait for this. This is a direct quote from the English translation, which I think sums up how he is feeling. We, the beaten party, accept the situation with more equanimity than you do, the victors. Is it not enough that we must fear you?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, well, there's nothing quite like being at the top of the pile in society and still believing so fervently that you are the victim. I won't draw modern parallels for you, dear listeners.
Oh, but they're there.
But they're there.
They're there.
You can draw them for yourself, but that's the kind of situation I feel like we're in right now.
Yeah, hence this speech shall henceforth be known as Getting the Band Back Together, Oh Woe Is Me. Now, he's not done yet.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
As you said,
this is big for Libby, I have to say.
It is. That's a recount, obviously, as you say, of what's been happening in the last, like, I don't know, 5 years.
Mm.
Yeah. So, on top of that, the plebeians currently are not being aggressive to the enemies of Rome. They would rather fight with the patricians than fight, presumably, the Aquians and the Volscians.
Do you mean fight back because the patricians are beating them up in the streets?
He does actually say take up arms against the patricians. Like,
yes,
he's indicating that, but
are they doing that because the patricians are beating them up in the streets?
Well, this is the thing. Yeah.
I think they might be.
I think they might be, yeah. I think what he means is they would prefer to fight the patricians. I don't think they're actually fighting the patricians. They're just using, I don't know, the laws and, you know, codes of conduct against them. But anyway, so the plebeians really need to get with the program, Dr. G. They need to appreciate the damage that has been done and that everybody's going to suffer now. The tribunes won't be able to undo this damage. They don't have that power, okay? People never come back from meetings with the tribunes better off financially.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. No.
Wait a minute. That's a very interesting detail.
Yeah. Even though...
How much does it cost you to see a tribune?
No.
Segue.
I think what he's saying is that, like, if the enemies conquer the city, you can go and see your tribune, but
it won't count for much.
Yeah. And even if you're talking about domestic situations, like,
yeah,
what are they really doing for you? He's pointing out here that, sure, they might help you to persecute some poor patrician or pass some laws, but really, really, how much is that benefiting you? I mean, let's stop and think about that. Back when the people served and obeyed the consuls rather than the tribunes, when they shouted on the battlefield and not in assemblies, when they made their enemies afraid rather than the patricians afraid, then they got booty and glory.
Mm.
And now look where they are.
Oh, look at that. Tapping into that classic Roman virtus.
Yep. Yep.
Oh.
Yep. They got it for themselves and for Rome.
Mm.
For Rome, Dr. G.
This glorious idea.
Yeah.
Where you get beaten up in the streets by day and then you go and clobber the enemy the next day.
Yeah. So look, Dr. G, the plebeians can stick around, hang out in the forum, go to their assemblies, but one day they will still have to fight again against the enemies of Rome, and they'll probably be captured on the battlefield.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, absolutely. So last year, as in 447...
This is a long speech when enemy is at the gate.
Yeah, I know. Well, they have gone off to Corbio by this stage.
Okay,
yeah.
Phew.
Okay.
Bye.
So last year in 447, at least according to Livy's account, not yours, there was a levy issued, but no one fought. In my account, not in yours.
Yeah. So the levy was issued, but nothing happened.
Yeah.
So that either means that potentially the levy was unsuccessful, so they didn't raise the troops that they needed.
Well, in my account, they excuse them from having to fill. Like, the consuls are doing away with it because they're like, it's cool.
We'll just have a year off.
Yeah, I think that's what they were saying, because they were obviously trying to make the plebeians happy. So instead, they hang around and scold each other like women. Yeah, that's never good.
Well, it turns out the patricians are really unsatisfied with making the plebeians happy.
And the plebeians are kicking around thinking that they're living in peace, unaware that there are dire consequences for these actions, Dr. G, and they are coming home to roost. Quintus is just going to level with them now, because he hasn't been so far.
I'm going to cut straight to the point now. All the rest of this was just building up.
Look, he's willing to become a hated man.
Oh.
But he has to be honest, okay? He has to be honest. The tribunes just cause problems. They just cause problems for Rome, okay?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they discourage military service, which is the backbone of the Roman community. I added that part. They instead encourage aggression within the state. The tribunes just make the plebeians all agitated. Okay?
But not in a productive way.
No, because what the plebeians don't see, Dr. G, is that the tribunes are just trying to advance their own careers or trying to get ahead somehow.
Okay, question.
Yeah.
What can a tribune of the plebs go on to do in Rome at this point in time? There's still a plebeian. Theoretically, there's some suggestion, there's been some hints in our source material that maybe the consulship is now open to plebeians.
Yeah.
Most historians would disagree that that's happening at this point in time.
Sure.
And certainly the names of the consuls suggest that it's not happening. They're all patrician names. So, I mean, it just seems like, I mean, for a plebeian, being a tribune is the top job.
Could you stop interrupting my speech with logic?
Oh, sorry.
I'm almost done.
I'm sorry, Titus. Keep going. Please.
All right. So, final point. The plebeians just need to get back to their traditional ways of doing things. They need to serve Rome as their ancestors have done. They need to listen to the consuls. And Quintius will personally be happy to be held responsible if they have not defeated the Aquians and the Volscians in just a few days. End of speech. Microphone drop.
I'd love to know how this speech was received, according to Livy's account.
Okay, hang on. The crowd goes wild! They love it! It's the most popular speech in years! It's the speech of the decade! It's so good, it's almost like it was given by a popular tribune. And I'm not saying that. Livy said that.
Yeah, okay. All right, so this really turns the population around. They're like, you know what? I've been whipped up into a frenzy. I really just want to pick up my spear and go and stab some Volscii and Aquii.
It's very much like this, Dr. G. Even the young plebeians are bopping around and they say, show me the levy.
Oh,
show me the levy.
I want to sign
up. Show me the levy!
Sign me up for this trip to Corbio.
Absolutely. They are so keen to serve. Everybody is really, really rolled up. And it only gets more... Well, exciting is probably not quite
the right
word.
Let's get our booty back. Let's get our booty back.
That is what's happening. But also, people are starting to come into the city who've obviously been affected by what's been happening outside of the city. And seeing these people who've been treated terribly rile them up even more.
Aha. All right. They're like, these are the people that we're fighting for.
Yeah. And the Senate, of course, look at Quintius and they're like,
bravo. Bravo.
I mean, this guy has received some honors in his life, but boy, did he deserve them. He's just so amazing.
I don't know.
He's the man.
What a speech.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Everyone's quite overwhelmed.
Rome
I actually don't know how
they have right now.
I'm exhausted after giving that speech. I don't even know how they have the energy to go to war, but nonetheless, this is the direction that we're heading in. Yes. Oh, okay. So there is still a bit of a dispute, obviously, about, you know, how to handle the plebeians at this point in time. So they definitely think that, you know, clearly other consuls have given the plebeians too much, given them too many compliments I think that's a burn towards Valerius and Horatius, definitely. Yeah. Others, however, they recognise they've also made the plebeians, you know, difficult by being too harsh.
Right, okay. Yeah. So there needs to be a new moderate path that is trod, but not so easy for the plebeians.
Exactly.
That so they become unpliable.
I think the Senate look at Quintius as the man that is going to now guide the state down that moderate path, Dr. G. They also want the tribunes to work with the consuls against their enemies.
Right, okay.
Unity all through the ranks. And so...
How are they going to achieve that? You just spent a whole speech insulting them, really.
Well, yes and no. I mean, as far as they're concerned, they've just been spelling out the facts. And so they get the tribunes on side and want them to ask the plebeians to be obedient to the patricians in a state of crisis, which this clearly is. The levy is held. The consuls demand that everyone present themselves at the Campus Martius the very next day. Wow. And there's a warning given. If anybody doesn't turn up, that should turn up. Oh, it will be dealt with. There's going to be a role taken.
You're not just putting your name down on the list. We also already have the list.
Yes, exactly. So anyone who should present themselves and doesn't, they will listen to their excuse and then deal with them as deserters if their excuse is found to be not good enough. If you don't have a medical certificate, young man... You're in big trouble.
But what about my bone spurs?
So clearly they're going in very seriously, obviously. Okay, and so they have to organise everything. So they organise it so that cohorts get to choose their own centurions and two senators are put in command of every cohort. It all happens really quickly. They are revving things up very quickly. The quaestors get the standards from the treasury that very same day.
Impressive.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not that far away from where they are, so.
Well, no. But so, I mean, I think it's the organisation.
Quickly.
Yeah, it's the organisation. Everyone's just getting into gear. Considering how anti-war they were, this is, I think, the point of the speed.
Yes.
So the army heads out, and they were within sight of the enemy the very next day and set up their camp very close to theirs, and they're obviously in the region of Corbio.
Corbio. Where is Corbio? Do we know? I think it's to the north somewhere?
I should have looked this up. I can't recall.
Yes, I will find out.
We definitely talked about Corbio before.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember it being conquered.
Yes.
Anywho, so they camp nearby and they are just sort of waiting for things to unfold in that the Romans are obviously very revved up and they are keen to get to the fighting. Both consuls obviously have equal authority over the army, but they had struck a deal so that they could address the situation as effectively as possible. And that is that Agrippa is allowing Quintius to assume the most supreme command.
Curious.
Indeed. He's doffing his cap, you know?
Yes. It's usually supposed to go day by day, as far as I understand it.
Well, I think that this is the thing.
Agrippa Furius is the lesser of the two consuls in terms of experience in the role.
Yeah, well, and let's face it, Quintius has fought the Aegis
on multiple occasions. Yeah. So.
Just to show what a stand-up guy Quintius is, in spite of this agreement, he still treats Agrippa as though they're total equals.
Oh, that's cute.
I know. So Quintius decides that he is going to attack the right wing, mm-hmm. and Agrippa is going to attack the left wing, and a guy called Spurius Postumius Albus is made lieutenant in command of the centre, and a guy called Publius Sulpicius is put in command of the cavalry.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's quite an operation we've got here. Quite a lot of detail. So Quintius and the infantry did well. Naturally. I mean, are we expecting anything else from Quintius?
Resounding victory all around, of course.
Yeah. So Picius manages to break through the enemy center with the cavalry. Now, he apparently would have been able to return to his fellow Romans whilst the ranks of the enemy were divided, but decided that it would be best instead to attack the enemy from the rear. However, he then comes up against the Volscian and Aquian cavalry and quickly finds himself in a very dangerous situation where he's surrounded. He can't contact the rest of the Roman army.
This is bad.
Yeah, so they're going to have to really fight their little hearts out if they're going to break free and manages to inspire his men to overcome the cavalry.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is impressive.
Yeah. Now, the Romans, of course, see this, and they're like, wow.
What a guy.
Yeah. They're even more inspired than they were before.
Like, well, if he can do it, let's get in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Romans are fighting just as fiercely as they can. I mean, these guys are little energized batteries. If you don't know what that is, listeners, that is a very famous Australian commercial. We've got a little battery running around, it's like full of energy. And the Aquians are really thrown off, I think, by how fiercely the Romans are attacking. So it's obviously all looking pretty good. However, poor little Agrippa.
Oh, look, I see. Yeah, I feel like we might be getting close to the moment where I have something to say about Agrippa.
Okay.
But you go, because all right. I'll slot it in when the moment arises or doesn't.
Okay, so it seems that, and this is actually accounted for in from Tynus as well.
Ah, yes, that's the source that I have.
There you yeah. go. So Agrippa, I don't think, is maybe doing quite as well on his side. And so he's a little downhearted because he hears that other parts of the army are doing better than him, and he's not happy about it. And so apparently to inspire his men, he seizes their standards and either carries them into battle himself or, like, throws them into the enemy ranks. Because, as we've talked about before, the Roman standards are something very sacred to the Romans serving under them. They're very important. It's a big deal if the enemy gets a hold of them. And so I guess this is trying to sort of urge his men on.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
does. He secures victory.
Yeah, so the reason why this ends up in Frontinus
yes.
is... It's part of a text called the Stratagemata.
Yes.
And so these are strategy textbooks, essentially, that are written. And Frontinus, we've got his copy of one of them. And these war strategies are divided up into, like, three sections, essentially.
Yeah.
So Roman military historians are all over this.
Yeah.
There's the stuff that you can do strategically prior to a battle.
Yeah.
So deceiving your opponent about their strength, etc., yeah. etc. Choosing a good time to launch the first attack.
Sure.
Climate, geography, topography, all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the strategies you can deploy in battle.
Mm.
So the pretense of flight, you might pretend that you're running away and then turn around and trap them.
Classic, yeah.
Stuff like that. And then there's siege tactics.
Right.
So it's like these three things. And Agrippa Furius ends up being directly mentioned as one of these strategies, this taking of the standard.
Yeah.
So his flank apparently gives way in battle.
Yeah.
So he's starting to lose.
Mm.
It's a bit of an issue.
Yes.
And it's like, well, how do we regain control in this scenario? Because if your flank starts to go for too long, you're going to have a collapse, essentially, of what the infantry is capable of.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to turn to running away.
Yeah.
And that would be bad.
Yes.
That's when you get sort of mowed down a lot and
yeah.
killed. So he snatches a military standard from the standard bearer who's nearby to him, hurls it into the hostile ranks.
Yeah.
And it, Frontinus tells us that the Hunutii are part of this.
Yeah.
And the Aquii. Now, whether the Hunutians are really in this battle, it wouldn't be beyond belief that they were.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, this is the act that kind of saves the day. Because as you say, the standard is the essential totem of the army, and
yeah.
it's like it's got a lot of sacred significance.
Yeah.
Losing it is devastating. It represents a connection to broader things on a spiritual level.
Mm.
So the Romans race in after it.
Yes.
And that is how they turn around the collapsing flank that they've got.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of strategy that we have seen before.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of the same strategy, I suppose, as the commander being the one to lead the charge.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But Agrippa Furius is not the first Roman to deploy this tactic.
Right.
We've also got a similar strategy credited to Servius Tullius
oh.
While serving under Tarquinius Priscus.
Well. So going back to the regal period.
Yeah.
Then.
Okay. So this is a thing where Agrippa Furius, it seems, might not have the practical experience in his background. He's
right.
just come into the consulship, but maybe he's listened carefully
yes.
about military strategy. He's heard the stories and he's deploying what are some textbook tactics to try and save the day.
Yeah.
And it does seem to work.
Oh, look, it's a gamble, but it pays off. Absolutely. So I'm going to finish off, I think, this episode by just telling you how this all ends up. I do have more
Ooh.
Detail about this year, but I think it would take too long to go through it all. So I'm going to say that Quintius is hearing that, you know, victory, victory, victory all along the line. except he hasn't heard what's going on with Agrippa yet. He's moving in on the camp, but he doesn't want to go in and make a final move until he knows that every single commander has secured victory, like all the way down. Because, and this is adorable, he wants all the troops to be able to take the camp and share in the spoils equally together.
Unity!
Exactly. And so that is what ends up happening. They take the camp pretty easily. They have conquered, resounding victory across the board. Tens across the board. And so the consuls are able to lead their armies back to Rome with plenty of spoils. All goods, of course, that had probably been lost to them when their own lands had been pillaged. So it's that classic case we've been talking about how there must be literally like three pairs of shoes in Rome and they're just circulating. But nonetheless, the interesting detail that we finish up with is that neither consul seems to have requested that they be granted a triumph.
Interesting.
Nor did the Senate seem to offer them one. And Livy doesn't really have a reason that he can point to for this. He thinks it has something to do with Valerius and Horatius and how when they had secured military victory, the Senate hadn't really wanted them to have triumphs.
Yeah, no, the Senate said no. So it might be the case that triumphs are a little bit touchy right now, but also having gone into this war on the back of having the enemy at the gate, it may not be a glorious victory from that sort of theoretical perspective.
Well, Livy thinks that Quintius and Agrippa Furius must have felt or been aware that what they had just secured, whilst it was great, it was nowhere near as great as what Valerius and Horatius had done, and they hadn't been given a triumph by the Senate. And so they didn't want to call attention to the fact that triumphs are something of a popularity contest.
So they just didn't ask in case they lost it.
Just in case.
Let's not mar a good day on the battlefield.
Well, I mean, even though when they knew they'd won, I don't think they wanted to call attention to the fact that they were obviously very popular with the Senate. Valerius and Horatius weren't. And you don't want to go into all those political situations. Yeah, so that seems to be where things end up. So I think it's time, therefore, Dr. G.
It's time for the partial pick, you reckon?
I think it might just be.
Oh, well.
Igor was just enraptured by that account of Roman triumph.
It was impressive.
I know.
I was excited. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time.
All right.
The partial pick. There are 50 golden eagles up for grabs.
Yep.
Divided into 5 categories out of 10.
Yep.
Measuring the Romans by their own standards. Indeed. Aha! Some of which have been thrown into the line of the enemy. All right, our first category is military clout.
Well, hell yes. I mean, there's a lot going on here. I don't know if I want to give it a 10 out of 10, because I do. I mean, the fact that Livy mentions that this victory is not as great as Valerius and Horatius's, it does give me some room.
Yes. I mean, and this is a comeback in some respects as well. This is,
yes,
from a Roman perspective, this is not a great situation to be in, because they're on the back foot.
Absolutely. They're really just attacking to win back what they have lost. So,
yes. So maybe a 6? Maybe a 5?
No. I think a 6 is fair, yeah.
All right.
Okay.
6 it is.
Yeah.
Roman diplomacy.
Diplomacy. I don't know what to think about this.
I don't think they're being diplomatic with anybody.
I don't think so either. I mean, there is obviously some talk, but I don't think that's the same as diplomacy.
No.
I mean, they do negotiate well, according to my account, with the plebeians and the tribunes and get them all on side, but I don't know.
Look, I don't know. I don't want to characterize that speech as diplomatic.
I don't either.
It's kind of insulting on many levels.
It is, and yet they don't seem to take it that way.
The Romans are into it, so clearly we're missing something.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to think about that. It's definitely rhetoric, but I don't know what... I don't know if I want to call it diplomacy.
Okay. 0 then.
0 it is.
Expansion.
Well, not really.
If anything, a contraction.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they clearly had their territory attacked. I mean, Corbio is definitely under their control. Can't remember exactly where it is, but it's definitely under their control.
They're really just getting back the things that they'd lost then.
They really are, yeah.
Okay, that's a -1. 0. Okay, Virtus.
Definitely.
There's been a lot of emphasis on Virtus. I think that's what is getting Titus's speech across the line.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I almost feel like it has to be a 10.
Ooh. I mean, he does turn it around in less than a day.
Yeah, and then there's Furius. I mean,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Furious. Yeah. With the standard.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I think because there's the both of them. The consoles are both showing a lot of weirdness, so I think it kind of
they
has
are.
To be too. Yeah.
They are. And Citizen Score.
I'm so depressed.
Look, I mean, it's a bit of a conflict, because in a way, I mean, unification, I kind of like that idea. I mean, Rome does need to be unified.
This
I mean, they are surrounded by enemies, most of whom they've created for themselves.
Yeah.
So they got themselves into this mess.
Yep.
Nevertheless, they now do have to defend themselves against it. So if they don't pay attention and they don't work together across the whole strata of the population, it is going to be a problem.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah.
That is a key truth in Titus' speech.
Yes.
On the other hand,
yes.
getting all the citizens together and putting them in an army, then throwing them against the enemy, is bound to lead to people dying.
This is true, and yet they do seem to win a lot of booty. There isn't much talk of death. I mean, it's typical. We've seen this time and time again in the way that Livy and Dionysius construct the narrative. After a time of crisis, when they've been forced to talk about something that perhaps doesn't show Rome in its best light or whatever, it is almost always followed within the next 5 years by an almost effortless military campaign. We've seen that time and time again. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that, obviously, none of this is actually happening.
But it does mean that there are some rhythms to the way that history is composed and thought about from a Roman perspective.
There is. And the fact that, I mean, given there is a lot of detail about the consuls, the lack of detail about the people is what's alerting me to the fact that this is a way of re-establishing the patricians' right to have control. It is absolutely justifying them having more of a say than anybody else in this state.
Yeah.
It's an elitist narrative.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Livy is buying into that big time.
Yeah. So there's very little detail about how the people feel about this, apart from the fact that they're excited and they're revved up. And they are happy to be unified. And look, I will say, I agree with you, if we even look at the lessons for our own time, there are definitely points of crisis where people have to overlook some maybe fairly major differences to unify with people who don't think the same way that they do in order to achieve larger victories. Climate change. But I still am dubious about how great it would be to be a citizen right now. You're getting a bit of booty, but yeah, you're still going off to war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, maybe about a 5 then. I mean, you're not getting beaten up by people in your own hometown anymore.
This is true. And it does seem as though, and this is where the moderation, I suppose, comes in. It does seem as though Quintius is taking the lead on this and he's not interested in persecuting them. That's all I will say for him. He's more interested in using them.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Dr. G. Well, that means, whew, has Rome bounced back? It's amazing what a little war to do with your score.
Yeah.
All right, so we have ended up on 21 out of 50 golden eagles.
Oh, that's quite impressive for Rome.
Considering the previous score, yes it is. Yeah.
Well, it has been, as always, an absolute pleasure.
Indeed it has.
I loved that speech.
Thank
in
you.
Terms of its delivery.
Wrote it myself, yeah.
And hated most of the content.
Yeah. I know how to do it.
But yes, it was great to hear and very enjoyable. And I feel like I learned a lot.
I think Rome is getting back on track. I think that's the positive we can take away from this. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Partial Historians. We would like to extend a special thanks to some of our newest Patreons, Chris, Kyle, and Anna. You too can support our show and help us to produce more engaging content about the ancient world by becoming a Patreon. In return, you receive exclusive early access to our special episodes with a variety of fascinating guests from all over the world. If you are unable to become a Patreon, there are other ways that you can support our podcasting journey. Give us 5-star reviews that make us smile all day long. Spread the word by buying and wearing some of our merch, or support our collaboration with the talented Bridget Clark, who has been helping us to produce some teacher resources on Gumroad. Or you could just tell someone about us. We love having new listeners. Until next time, we are yours in ancient Rome.
Hello, and I'm Dr. Anne Wand from the Coffee and Cocktails podcast. Every month, we bring in fascinating guests from TED Talk speakers to entrepreneurs to academics to fill our ears and minds with new topics and ways of thinking. Right now, we're hosting a new series on controversies and contraband, where we interview world experts on unknown histories, including Italy's secret catacomb schools, to modern-day witchcraft, undisclosed Nazi and fascist history, and much, much more. To learn more, check us out on SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.